Hello and welcome to this week's Propcast. I'm Andrew Teacher. I'm a senior advisor to Mumford, and I'm joined this week by the director of Build to Rent at the Journalist Partnership, Catherine Russell. Catherine, lovely to see you. Thank you very much for coming in. Now, how is everything in your neck of the woods? You're very, very busy with a number of major residential projects, but some will be asking, what's the thesis here? Your Journalist Partnership, you're known, obviously, as being the leading retail brand in the UK through John Lewis and Waitrose stores. But you've got a strategy to develop thousands of homes for rent on, around buildings, land that you own, and on other sites as well. Where is that strategy going and what's the thinking?
So hi, Andrew. Great to be here and such an enthusiastic start to the year. So where's our strategy? So last year was all about getting our sites into planning. So we have got West Ealing and Bromley in the foothills of that, and Reading is shortly to come thereafter. We spent the last 9 months setting up our OpCo and have gone live with that in Leeds. But I suppose to answer your question, what does the future hold? So we're very much looking at what does our pipeline look at? So bringing forward our existing estate portfolio. And then there are two other aspects we're looking at as well in terms of our portfolio. So thinking about acquiring third-party sites, but then also looking at partnerships as well. So that's the development side of the business. When it comes to the operational side of the business, a very exciting year ahead for us in terms of we're looking to launch our second operational site, which will be in Leicester. So some huge milestones ahead of us and an exciting time.
We'll come back to the operational stuff in a minute, but I just want to stick on the actual thesis here, because questions that you've been asked on this already are, why are you looking at developing and operating build-to-rent housing when arguably you should be focused on retailing?
Yeah. Okay. So we'll let's step back a bit. So before I took on the role as director of Build to Rent and got into this space at all, my role was to head up the real estate function for the partnership on a group capacity basis. And we have a vast and huge retail and real estate portfolio. It's about 2.5 billion in terms of worth. But the challenge we've had with it is it's underutilized. And if I take the example of our department store portfolio, when we were first looking at our real estate portfolio and I was given the remit to actually try and work out how do we bring this forward in a much more efficient way, looking at our Gen 1 portfolio, the front of house to back of house ratio typically on retail is about 80-20. In the case of the John Lewis portfolio, it's 60-40 in favour of back of house. So that gives you a sense of scale of the challenge that we're faced with. We started to look at the build to rent market, and actually initially we started to look at the OpCo side of it. So bringing to bear everything that our brand is really well known for in terms of service, trust and loyalty. But quickly realised that actually in that market, whilst it's a really good market, the margins there are pretty low. So that's where we started to formulate a business model that brings a development aspect to it. It brings the OpCo aspect to it and an investment perspective to it as well. And that is what I would term as our integrated business model, and brings forward what is, as I described at the beginning, a underutilized real estate portfolio, but we're responsibly bringing it forward at a time where actually there is a market that is undersupplied in terms of housing, and you know, it's lacking a level of trust, service and loyalty, which are all the things that we can deliver.
I mean, there's certainly a need in this marketplace, and I think most people rationally would look at any site that currently is occupied by a Waitrose and think, well, there's probably going to be enough people living nearby to this to support quite a large quantum of rental housing. So in that sense, it makes perfect sense. And structurally within Journalist, which is a partnership, just for people that don't quite know what that means, do you want to just explain that?
Yeah, so we are a partnership, which means everybody who works within the partnership has a say to a certain degree in terms of how the business is run. We're run on a democratic structure, and that means that somebody represents all partners. So for example, in Build to Rent, we'll have somebody who represents our views and our concerns, and that goes all the way up to the chairman. So you could probably equate that to an equivalent of a stakeholder or a shareholder in a normal business. It's a very different way of running a business. It was set up over 150 years ago by the founder, who I suppose actually set up to try and make a positive societal change. And it just so happened that we started out in retail. But over the years and decades, actually, we've diversified continually. So whilst we started out in retail, we've also diversified into grocery, financial services. We were the early adopters of online. And actually, Build to Rent is just the next logical step of diversification, given the assets that we've got at our disposal.
So structured within the partnership, the team that you run sits as a slightly separate unit, so it's not basically using JLP resources to deliver this. It is a separate team, a separate resourced unit almost.
Well, we're all partners, so we're all still John Lewis partners. We sit under Nina Bhatia, who is the exec director for new services. So under her remit, she has Build to Rent and financial services. And we have a very small, efficient and core team that is focused on Build to Rent. It's probably about 10 of us. But then we do draw in what I would describe as our ecosystem matrix, other partners who roll on and roll off the project as and when required. So that could be human resources, project management, etc.
Yeah. So in terms of the product, you're looking at essentially a mid-market product, not high-end, Moda, Grey Star style, top of the market, but something that's probably going to be, sort of sitting above and around the kind of thing that Grainger do.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose that's probably the best way to describe it. I think, you know, there are some great operators out there in the build to rent market. I describe it, whether it's in the UK or the US or wherever else I've looked at it, that 70% of the build to rent proposition is very much plug and play. So regardless of where you go, the kind of proposition, you'll get the standard co-working, private dining, the whole host of amenity provision. And it's dialed up and dialed down depending on specification. I think what we are looking to do differently is the top slice of that, so the 30% of what is it John Lewis can do that nobody else can. And that's essentially drawing on our ecosystem of services. So when you think about the John Lewis partnership brand, on the John Lewis side, we've got access to over 200 interior designers. Can you imagine them coming in and whipping up your most desired apartments? We've got access to Waitrose and the delivery provisions. We've got financial services. We've got a whole host of services that we're looking to deploy to our residents as well. And then on the flip side of it, in terms of the proposition, we've also got, as you kind of touched on earlier, we're the largest co-owned business in the UK. And I think when we started to look at what is it that residents need and want in this space, there was a huge calling for, actually, people feel like they've landed in the rental market rather than it was originally somewhere where they wanted to be. And they don't necessarily have a sense of ownership. So we're looking to think about how can we deploy the principles of our co-owned business into the rental market for residents to make them feel like they've got a sense of ownership. And actually, when it comes to the demographic profile, it will span across a variety of ranges from, you know, the 18 to 34 year olds all the way to downsizers as well. But in terms of specification, it will be quality led at an affordable price point.
And I think it's interesting seeing the effects that rise in interest rates is actually having on the rental market. Because if you think about, obviously, the barrier to ownership has been growing, or the barriers have been growing and increasing, and that age level at which people can afford to buy has been going up and up really for the last 20 years. And it's interesting seeing the impact of the rate rises, meaning that people that might have just about been able to scrape into ownership now can't, and they're thus staying in the rental market for a bit longer and perhaps have a bit more money to spend as a result. So I think it's going to be an interesting dynamic, and that's obviously been one of the things I think that's created that additional pressure on the rental market over the last 18 months or so. That combining with really the tailwinds of the tax changes that was started by George Osborne when he was Chancellor almost 10 years ago. So there's an interesting mix of tailwinds there. In terms of a product perspective, I think it's a really interesting proposition having John Lewis there. It is and remains one of the most trusted brands in Britain. And as you say, renting is probably the last big area of spend that any consumer has that just isn't really dealt with by trusted brands. Everything from mobile phones to streaming music to buying shoes to whatever you do, it does come from brand. And why do you think the market is still where it is, in the sense that the vast majority, 98 and a bit percent, is still mum and pop landlords?
Good question. I think, as you say, it's down to the fact that the stat or the premise that you kind of identified around people are staying in rental accommodation much longer than they ever anticipated is definitely something that we found within our research as well. So you've got people that have gone into rental accommodation because it was a necessity, are finding themselves in there for much longer than they ever anticipated, and therefore going in as a young professional and are ultimately getting married and starting a family in rental accommodation as well. And I think that's just the nature of how the market is panning out. And I view the rental market now as following the same trend as the for sale market, in that actually people are now struggling to actually afford to find their perfect and dream home ultimately.
Yeah, and then that's been said. I think there are people moving out of London because they can't afford it. The stock's not there.
And I think that's the point. The stock's not there. The supply's not there. So the fundamentals of the residential market, supply and demand, is out of kilter, which is causing the problem both in the for sale market and the rental market.
Yeah, and that's certainly one of the difficulties that investors have in coming in. I mean, let's talk about development, because for a number of the schemes that you've got, you're looking at building above stores, existing Waitrose stores. The Reading plans, that's a separate site, no store, and it's a vacant warehouse that you'd be dropping and rebuilding. But on the other two that you're planning, West Ealing and Bromley, there will be Waitrose stores there and car parks next to them. How difficult is that? Because obviously any kind of brownfield development in an urban setting is challenging, you know, when you throw in roads and railways and people and all of the other stuff. But having a functioning shop is obviously another level of trickiness.
It's very challenging. We've got multiple stakeholders that we need to get on side internally. We've got customers, we've got residents. You know, you've got to think about it from day zero all the way through to actual operational status. So it's just another layer of complexity. But, you know, all of our sites, the ones that you've kind of described in terms of West Ealing and Bromley, really well located, West Ealing right on top of the Elizabeth line, ripe for this type of use. So it makes sense. We've thought about the development itself in terms of how we design it, in terms of all of the potential users. So thinking about it from a resident perspective, thinking about it from a customer perspective, thinking about it from a worker, a visitor. We've tried to ensure that from all aspects of design, including the external community as well, that it's effectively designed for in-use operation. But it comes with its challenges, and you know, there's lots of issues that we'll have to overcome in terms of trade disruption, particularly throughout the build. But you know, we're committed to our sites as retailers as well as a housing provider, so we'll make sure that we deliver.
And presumably there's a hope that they'll lease up a little bit quicker, because you're going to have an inherent footfall on the site for people coming and buying their groceries.
Yeah, whether that generates lease up quicker or not, I suppose will be determined. But I think regardless of that, what we've seen in the market, particularly the rental market, for every one resident looking for accommodation, there's another 13 to 17 applicants behind them. So I'm not sure that that's necessarily a challenge right at this moment in time.
And Ealing's very well located. I mean, you're talking about sort of 16, 17 minutes to the West End.
Yeah.
Which is phenomenal, as I remember when Ealing used to be where you'd end up if you fell asleep on the Central after too many drinks on a Friday afternoon.
Yeah.
So yeah, things have changed, and it's a great spot. And Ealing has been home to quite a lot of built for rent accommodation over the last few years. A number of student schemes there. It's home to a number of tall buildings and has had a lot of development, largely on the back of its extensive and very deep connections to the rest of the London transport network. In terms of how you're thinking about customer experience, because obviously this is the absolute gold-plated DNA for John Lewis, right? It's thinking about customers, it's understanding their needs and delivering on those needs, whether you're thinking about in-store experiences or e-commerce. So what's the thought process with some of these schemes? How are you considering, for example, public realm and green spaces you know, in the context of these schemes, you know, particularly when there are tight commercial considerations at play.
Yeah. So when it comes to the design aspects of it, the things that we have really focused on is biophilic design. I'm a massive fan also of natural light, which I think is really, really important. And there have been some real lessons learnt from COVID as well around what is important for residents within their homes. And so providing open space is really important. So we've got around 30,000 square feet of green space, which is the equivalent of 11 tennis courts, which I think, you know, is...
That's at Ealing, right?
Yeah, which is, you know, unrivaled really in terms of the amount of open space in an urban area. We've got things like making sure that the longevity of the specification that we're putting in stands the test of time. But as you kind of described, it's all about thinking about the resident experience. So making it as frictionless and as efficient as possible from their perspective. But as I described, because this isn't a simple single use development, we've got to think about it from all other aspects as well, including the external community and environment in which it sits.
But there are things like lighting, safety, surface access that you'd have to consider anyway, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And particularly Ealing, where you've got rail and road bridges and walkways and all of these sorts of things that you're looking at investing additional funds in.
Yes.
To support infrastructure around. These are things that are in everybody's interests, right?
Yeah, yeah. So for example, you know, leaning into our West Ealing scheme, there have been some things that through public consultation that the local residents and community have raised around required infrastructure, you know, which will make a positive and tangible difference to the local community and how the site integrates with its surrounding areas. So really, really important things that should be done regardless, really. And we're hoping that our development enables and facilitates some of that change.
And where do you stand on internal amenities then? I mean, you've talked a little bit before about not necessarily being at the top end of pricing. So how do you make those decisions around how much space to give away for different uses?
Yeah, so I think there is a, as I kind of described earlier, a very standardised model that every build-to-rent scheme should typically have. And as I described, you dial up or dial down the specification. And what we're not doing is competing on an amenity proposition. That's not what we're about. So, you know, we're not looking to provide climbing walls or swimming pools or anything like that. Where we are really, really focused is on the customer experience in terms of service. That's what we believe is really important. It's about what you do and how you do it, not necessarily about how big the gym is or how big the amenity space is.
Oh, it's interesting. And a lot of the people that I speak to, many of them say that these gyms just often aren't hugely used, and same goes often for cinema rooms. And interesting, I was talking to one developer recently, a high-end developer, some big central London schemes, and they were saying they'd wish they'd put in more co-working, which is interesting. And I think people will find that cheaper, more practical uses, for example, Zoom booths where you can go and have a conversation that cost relatively little amounts of money to put in. Those sorts of things would probably be better used and higher valued than very complicated gyms that often people get with their jobs.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a balance, right, between providing something that sells in terms of a lifestyle and people can see themselves living there, but then there's the practicalities of it as well. And I think in terms of our approach to amenity, it's about providing space that has purpose. And, you know, you talk about co-working, it's got to be functional. You have a lot of spaces where you find long, large tables with only one person sitting at it. What you want to create is an environment which enables people to feel like they're a part of something, but they can actually get on and do their work, and it's an efficient use of space. So the thing that we're focused on is making sure that the space is as adaptable as possible, because trends and people's and residents' needs will change over time. COVID is a prime example of that in terms of how our work patterns have changed, and therefore the need and desire for more space for people to work in different environments.
And then you've seen that firsthand, haven't you, through some of your other roles. You sit on the board of the New West End Company, which is the business improvement district for the West End of London, represents all of the big retailers in that space. And that's obviously been a poster child, hasn't it, for change over the last few years in terms of people's habits, the busyness that you see Tuesday to Thursday, the quieter periods, I mean, less so over the festive season, but certainly Soho's a very different place, isn't it? Often on a Monday, Tuesday night with people not in town for work.
Yeah, working patterns, the way we move and live in our towns and cities has fundamentally changed. But, you know, I was in London on Friday night. It was just as busy as it's probably always been, but that's probably driven by the seasonal nature of the time. But yeah, things will continually change and adapt. And, you know, our buildings and the places in which we live have got to be designed to move with that.
Mm. So, I mean, talking about your career, you've been a journalist for a number of years, 15 years now. How has the role evolved over that time? And what have been some of the things that have helped you in your career that you'd like to see probably more accessible to others?
Yeah. So I started out my career in small property consultancies. Philip Isaac, for those of the audience that remember them, down to Atis Real and then BNP Paribas. And then, yeah, landed in John Lewis over 15 years ago. And I think the thing that has kept me here for as long as I have been is continual change. You know, I've always been given opportunities to grow myself, grow what I'm doing, being exposed to different things. And I think the thing that has helped me within that journey has been having really good mentors and leadership as well. And I think that is hugely important in terms of what we bring forward in terms of the next generation of those working in the real estate industry, actually. Mentors provide, so it's a huge addition to people's growth. And I think that's what's really, really important for individuals and businesses going forward, ultimately. We need diversification. We need different thought processes. And, you know, there are various routes and means to that. But the other thing I would say is beyond mentorship and opportunities is relationships. People and property very much come hand in hand together. And that kind of key ingredients of those three things have definitely helped me progress my career, both within John Lewis, but also within the real estate industry as well.
Yeah. And where do you see that change occurring over the next years? The whole of the real estate world is becoming more service orientated, isn't it? It's recognizing that to make money for investors, you've actually got to drive and deliver good service.
Yeah.
But how are some of those other aspects that, I guess, other things that are important to the partnership at John Lewis, how are they driving decision-making? So you talked a little bit earlier on about biophilic design, which is an interesting design techniques reflecting nature, both in terms of materials and processes and particular amenities. But what are things that John Lewis believes at a corporate level that you're having to inject into your day-to-day dealings or into the build-to-rent products you're creating?
Yeah, so I think the two biggest things here are ESG, hugely important, every aspect of that as well. And the other is purpose. So we are a purpose-led organisation. So when it comes to what we're developing, what we're operating, the relationships and partnerships we form are all centred around those two things and making sure that the people that we're interacting on have the same level of understanding and vision and approach is hugely, hugely important to us. And that drove a lot of our decisions around who we went with regards to our investment partner in terms of Aberdeen.
Mm. And then in terms of the operational side of the business, you know, you've established that platform. It's already managing a number of units owned by Aberdeen. What was the thought process there behind taking on board management of other people's stock before you've completed your initial developments?
Yeah. So, well, as everybody knows in the property game, everything takes a long time to come to fruition. And so the idea behind taking on the assets from Aberdeen was on the basis that actually, as I've just described, everything takes a very long time to come to fruition. And the opportunity in the interim to set up an operating platform, to have access to residents that we can tap into in terms of understanding what is it that they really need? How do they want to live? What are the things that they want from the John Lewis partnership? And what is it that we can offer them to make that experience the best it can possibly be? We can take all those learnings and insights and feed it back into our development and design process for the next phase of our delivery, but also is enabling us to demonstrate our credibility in the marketplace as well, and ultimately understand how and when we want to drive and develop the operational platform itself.
Mm. So what does the next year ahead look like then in terms of everything that's on your desk? You've got these three schemes coming to planning, mobilizing some operational units, obviously looking at other sites. How are you dealing with the headwinds of the market as it currently stands?
Well, this is a long-term play for us. So yes, lots of headwinds in the short term, but ultimately the fundamentals of the build-to-rent and residential market remain really resilient and strong. And we have faith in that in the long term. So I don't want to dwell too much on the short-term impacts, you know, not undermining the impacts they are having, but that it's a moment in time. So, you know, looking towards the long-term vision, as I described at the beginning, 10,000 homes is our overall ambition, and we are building up our pipeline, both on the development side, but also the operational side to deliver that.
Well, some big ambitions, some big numbers. I think John Lewis is very much needed in this space, and hopefully many customers will get to experience that very, very, very soon. Catherine Russell, thank you very much for coming in. Lovely to see you here, Director of Build to Rent for the John Lewis Partnership. This has been PropCast. I've been Andrew Teacher. You can subscribe on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, wherever you get your podcasts from, just search PropCast. Do suggest any guests, leave any abuse, comments or compliments that you'd wish to. Thank you very much for tuning in, and we'll see you again very, very soon.